I was working in a coffee shop in Boston to like help pay rent while I was training for the trials. And so people kept joking. They're like, oh yeah, she just took a 2-hour coffee break and went and ran the Olympic trials marathon.
On the Podium is back with more Olympians and Paralympians sharing their journeys to the top. On the Podium from the BBC World Service. Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to The Inquiry on the BBC World Service with me, David Baker. Each week, one question, four expert witnesses, and an answer.
On Monday, indigenous delegations began arriving at Brasilia to participate in the 2023 edition of the Terra Livre Indigenous Camp.
In April this year, more than 6,000 indigenous people came to Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, to demand that the country's new president, Luiz Ignacio da Silva, or Lula for short, deliver on his campaign promises to protect indigenous territories and end deforestation in the Amazon, where many of them live. The future of the Amazon was central to Lula's campaign, after Brazil's previous president, Jair Bolsonaro, effectively opened up the territory to agriculture and mining. According to the government, in the first 6 months of Lula's presidency, there was a 33% drop in deforestation compared to the same period last year. But many indigenous leaders want Lula to go further, to end deforestation entirely, to protect their lands, and to work with them to guarantee the rainforest's future. So for this episode of The Inquiry, we're asking, can Brazil's indigenous population save the Amazon?
Part 1. Brazil's original inhabitants.
When European colonizers first arrived in South America in the early 1500s, there were an estimated 11 million indigenous people living in the area we now call Brazil. Today that number is just 1.6 million, and they make up a tiny fraction of the Brazilian population.
It's less than 1%. They are spread throughout Brazil, but mostly around the Amazonian basin. They are divided in around 300 different ethnic groups that speaks around 270 different languages.
Our first witness is Pedro Cesarino, professor of anthropology at the University of São Paulo. He says the decline in their numbers began almost immediately after the arrival of the Europeans.
In the beginning of the process of colonization in the 16th century, indigenous people were exploited in different ways. Their lands were stilled, and their physical existence was also compromised. They were kept as slaves.
Brazil's indigenous population continued to be exploited as the Portuguese extended their rule over the country. And that situation only worsened with the rise of industrialism.
The end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, Brazil was beginning to industrialize. So this was probably the most dangerous time for indigenous populations. They almost disappeared.
One reason their land and way of life was so threatened at the time was a new world demand for rubber caused by the invention of the motor car.
During the rubber boom, cities like Belém do Pará and Manaus became very rich. And this was because rubber was being exported to the outside. And indigenous populations were kept as slaves to produce rubber. And it was a very harsh slavery.
And even when that boom ended, they faced a new threat from miners who came to the Amazon basin to prospect for gold, something that successive Brazilian governments have encouraged.
Specifically, if we consider people such as the Yanomami from North Amazonia, because their conditions of existence were being threatened, their physical conditions, their cultural conditions, mostly by the invasion of miners that were sustained or at least allowed by the federal government. And Lula's presidency took as one of its first measures the process of taking all the miners away from the Yanomami's indigenous reservation. So the situation is much better nowadays. But anyway, it's a kind of social problem because miners can be expelled from one land, but then they will look for another place to work. So this is something that is close to a kind of structural genocide, meaning that their land still are being invaded by official corporations or by underground networks of criminality.
And Pedro says, as well as threatening the indigenous people's land and way of life, Brazil's policies in the Amazon also mean that we risk losing their long-held knowledge about how to care for the rainforest itself.
Indigenous populations, they have knowledge enough to understand how the forest works and what can be brought out of it without compromising its existence. When you go to an indigenous village, you find different kinds of food that you cannot find in Brazilian urban spaces, different sorts of banana and potatoes and so on, which means that they have a kind of security and a sustainability for their own way of living. They created different kinds of species, they created different kinds of ways of connecting with the forest that produced a biodiversity that even Western science doesn't know.
And that knowledge, he says, is now badly needed as the world wrestles with the challenges of falling biodiversity and increasing global warming.
I think that they are essential not only to the future of the Amazon, but to the future of the world. They are the owners of a way of conceiving the existence and the relationship with nature that the modern world destructed. They are probably the only people in the earth that still know.
Part 2, the Amazon itself.
The Brazilian Amazon accounts for about 3/5 of the whole region. And that's a region about 23 times the size of the UK, to give you an idea. If you include the other 8 Amazonian countries, then you're up to 7 million square kilometers, which is about 45% of all remaining tropical forest regions in the planet.
Our second witness is Carlos Perez, Professor of Conservation Biology at the University of East Anglia in the United Kingdom, and someone who spends much of his time doing conservation work in the Amazon. Carlos is Brazilian and grew up in Belém in the Amazonian state of Pará.
I was basically an urban kid and I traveled to my father's farm almost on a monthly basis. It was a big piece of real estate, about 5,000 hectares. And that's basically how I started becoming interested in natural history of the Amazon.
Carlos says that the riches of the Amazon lie in its incredible range of plant and animal life. The region is home to an estimated 400 billion trees, belonging to 16,000 different species, as well as more than 1,300 species of birds and tens of thousands of species of plants.
The Amazon packs the most amount of terrestrial biodiversity anywhere, and I think it would rival any ecosystem in the world, including coral reefs. Most of that biodiversity is unknown to science. I think the estimates are that we've only described between 15 and 20% of all species in the Amazon. The trouble is that at the current rate of forest degradation and deforestation, sadly, most of that biodiversity will go extinct before it's documented, even for the first time.
The threat to that biodiversity comes from two sources, beef farming and growing soybeans.
Traditionally, it was hugely dominated by cattle ranching. Over 80% was cattle ranching. The rest was either slash and burn agriculture or perennial cropland. But now, cattle ranching has become relatively unprofitable, low revenue. So many of the cattle ranches are being converted into soybean plantations, which is the most lucrative land use in the Amazon. In one of the states in the Brazilian Amazon where I work, which is Mato Grosso, we had another 1,100,000 hectares of new soybean farms just in the last year.
And those gold miners who we heard about from our first witness, Pedro Cesarino, as well as encroaching on indigenous land, also cause serious damage to the environment.
The whole methodology of extracting gold mines in the Amazon is heavily reliant on mercury that essentially gets through the whole food chain through bioaccumulation. And there are many places around the Amazon where we now have evidence of mercury pollution up the food chain, all the way to caimans and crocodilians and fish predators and everything else. And this is now also affecting people, of course.
The Amazon also has an important role in preserving the Earth's water cycle, not only in South America, but further afield too.
Once we lose 30-40% of the Amazon, perhaps we will have already crossed that threshold, that tipping point, because the hydrological viability of the rest of the Amazon, particularly in seasonally dry areas where the dry season is severe, cannot be sustained. Something like 40% of all rainfall in the Amazon is self-generated. A large tree in the Amazon can pump 50,000 liters, perhaps 100,000 liters into the air every day. So all of that rain that is gradually moves west and eventually collides with the Andes and feeds the breadbaskets of southern Brazil all the way down to Argentina would also be decelerated without the forest cover. There are all sorts of climatic teleconnections between the Amazon and other regions. So, for example, regions as far away as Texas would be drier without the Amazon.
And then there's the role the Amazon plays in capturing carbon from the atmosphere.
The estimates are that perhaps the Brazilian Amazon alone stores 90 billion metric tons of carbon, a tree that could take 800 years to reach maximum size can now be cut down in less than 20 minutes. So it's very important to keep that carbon on the ground.
What in the World is the podcast exploring the stories and the issues that you need to know about?
93% of fast fashion workers aren't getting paid a living wage.
The former president is accused of trying to overturn democracy.
How do elite athletes train in and around their menstrual cycle?
Understand more, feel better with What in the World from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts and hit subscribe. Part 3, President Lula.
The Lula government was explicitly supported by the indigenous movement in Brazil.
Our third witness is Ana Carolina Alfinito, legal advisor at Amazon Watch, an NGO that works to protect the rainforest.
There was a relationship of trust and of political construction throughout the campaign, also in order to get the Bolsonaro administration out of office, because this was the most urgent demand of indigenous peoples at the time.
Lula came to power for a third time at the beginning of this year, and one of his first acts was to create a new ministry for indigenous peoples, headed up by an indigenous woman, Sonia Guajajara. The challenge he faces now is to turn policy into action and deliver on his promise to protect indigenous lands.
This shows that there is convergence between the current administration and the demands of the indigenous peoples, which are primarily demands for land demarcation.
Demarcation is central to the indigenous peoples' demands in Brazil. It means establishing protected territories where they can live, but in which farmers and gold miners are prohibited from operating.
The title of an indigenous land is given to the federal union, to the federal government. So it is the union, it is the state that is the formal owner of an indigenous land in Brazil. And this land cannot be divided up. It can never be privately owned. It can never be conceded to any party whatsoever. It is destined for the exclusive use of the indigenous people that have been recognized as its traditional owners.
Lula's difficulty is that his demarcation proposals are being strongly resisted by Brazil's Congress.
This is a coalition government full of contradictions, which has to deal with a legislature which is very explicitly anti-indigenous. So the indigenous movement is currently at a moment of pressuring federal government for Lula to keep his campaign promises, to start again land demarcation processes, to strengthen indigenous land rights, and ultimately to enable indigenous peoples to continue living and thriving in Brazil.
One way the anti-Indigenous lobby in Congress is trying to curtail Indigenous land rights is through what is called marco temporal, a legal argument that says Indigenous peoples only have rights to land they were occupying in 1988, when Brazil's current constitution was created.
And so Indigenous people started saying, we were here, but in 1970, we were removed from our territory. And we want to go back because we still remember our land. We're still spiritually connected to it. And this land is ours. And what the Marco Temporal says is, if you were not there in 1988, then you cannot demand this land legally.
Indigenous groups are challenging the proposed legislation in the Supreme Court. And in the meantime, Anna says, they're being forced to take practical measures to protect the lands in which they live.
They have been confronting in their territories, face to face, the illegal invaders of their territories. They have been removing these invaders. They have been monitoring deforestation and degradation within their lands and sending this data to federal police or to the public prosecutor's office. So indeed, Indigenous peoples have autonomously taken over a large part of land rights enforcement.
The results of the Supreme Court case are expected in September. But if marco temporal is enshrined in law, that will have big implications, not only for Indigenous rights, but for the rainforest itself.
It is a threat to the climate balance, because if the marco temporal is approved, we will see much more deforestation. Even the lands that are already titled may be reversed, because it might be that someone will say, well, who can prove to me that those Indigenous groups were there exactly in 1988? Which means that these lands will no longer be protected. Indigenous peoples will lose tremendously their capacity to survive.
Part 4, the Indigenous message to the world.
The argument of Indigenous people living in the Amazon is that the future of the rainforest is a matter for the whole world. Our fourth witness is Kawa Huni Quinn, a young Indigenous leader from the Huni Quinn people, who has made it his mission to get that message out. He's keen for the rest of the world to know more about the Indigenous way of life. I spoke to him on WhatsApp.
We, the Huni Quinn, are also known as the Kashnoa. We live in Brazil and Peru. My community lives in the state of Acre, Brazil. So in the Acre, the Huni Quinn have three Indigenous territory along two rivers, Jordan River and the Tarawaka River. So we live with communities like 80 villages, there is chiefs. We have to gathering, we have to build a house. So we work together. We have to hunting, we have to fishing, and celebrate with the community. We plant banana, watermelon. We plant our traditional vegetable from the Huni Quinn garden.
That way of life, which has been the same for millennia, is now threatened, both physically and culturally, he says, by the arrival of non-Indigenous Brazilians in Huni Quinn territory.
Right now, in the forest, we try to help the community about the food, because the influence from the city, they encouraging us to buy food at the shop. This is what's happening in my region, in Jordan, right now. The white men want to destroy this forest. They are cutting the trees. They are trying to destroy more our territories. Right now, they want to change our life, but we are trying to protect our territory, protect our animals. We are trying to protect our forests, our culture. So this is the situation.
And he says the world needs to learn from Indigenous people's deep understanding of how to care for the environment.
Every year, the weather is changing, very hot. And when it's rain, it's flooding, and we know it comes from deforestation, from the farm, drugs, violence, and the Huni Queen and the indigenous people, they are fighting, trying to minimize or trying to understand the white man, to stop, to listen to us. The knowledge of the indigenous is always living with the nature, protect the nature, thinking about the next generation. But I think the big business, the farmer, they don't think about the next generation. They want to destroy more and bring more problem.
Kawa is pleased with what he sees as Lula's new commitment to indigenous rights. But he says if the Brazilian state does not side with their call for land demarcation, the results will be bad for indigenous communities and bad for the world.
I believe Lula is listening. I'm so grateful now that we have Sonia Guajajara as our minister to present indigenous people in Brazil. If don't listen to indigenous voice, I believe that the indigenous people is going to be, don't exist anymore. And it's going to be a very big problem for the world.
That message from Brazil's indigenous population is beginning to be heard. Early this month, leaders from 8 Amazon nations met in the Brazilian city of Belém and committed to reduce deforestation in the rainforest even further and to protect the territories of indigenous communities. For some campaigners, the summit didn't go far enough. They were really hoping for a commitment to zero deforestation. But for many, the fact that for the first time it listened to the demands of indigenous people and promised to act alongside them was encouraging. So to return to our question, can Brazil's indigenous population save the Amazon? Well, not by themselves, they can't. But what is clear is that without them and the knowledge they bring to the job of caring for the Earth's environment, the rest of us may not be able to either. A final word, or song even, from our fourth witness, Kawa Huni Queen.
I'm going to send this message for the world.
Tapunki, tapunki. Tapunki surishun.
This song is to feel a little bird, the love from the forest, to feel about the love from the nature, from the elements, because the Huni Queen believes, and we do, we have to pray for the clean water, for the clean wet air, for the nature, for the animal, foods, because we need these elements to be alive. This is message from the forest for the world, and the human needs to listen our message.
This episode of The Inquiry was presented by me, David Baker, produced by Jill Collins, and researched by Matt Toulson. The editor was Tom Bigwood, and the programme was mixed by Kelly Young.